I want to give you a truth tonight. I really believe we're going to be out just a few minutes early. I don't plan to preach more than about 25 or 30 minutes. I never plan to preach more than that, but it usually doubles. But no, but I want to help you tonight. It doesn't matter if you live by yourself. It doesn't matter if it's just you and your spouse. It doesn't matter if you have children at home. I want to help you tonight. The title of the sermon is Joy and Fellowship at Home. Joy and fellowship at home. Maybe you've noticed, but did you notice? It's not always easy, and it's not always possible to have a happy home. You say, why? Did you know that children are sinners? Did you know that parents are sinners? Did you know husbands are sinners? Yes. Did you know wives are sinners? No, they're not. Maybe, and if you listen to this statement, maybe our ideal of a perfect Christian home should not include sinlessness. I think too many times we expect perfection instead of joy. We're all sinners. That means not everything's always going to be happy. I grew up in a Christian home. My mom and dad were saved. My dad got saved just before my brother was born, almost 60 years ago, 59-ish years ago. My mom had been saved as a girl. Matter of fact, what would be her sister-in-law, which is my aunt, led her to the Lord outside in the front yard, two houses down from where she was. My mom and dad grew up with two houses between them. They were neighborhood sweethearts, amen? Actually, it wasn't that way till later, but I grew up in a Christian home. My children grew up in a Christian home. They grew up in the ministry. And, may I say this, neither of the homes, one I grew up in or the one my children grew up in, were perfect. You say, why? I was there. And I'm not afraid to say that. God wants for you to enjoy home. Home is one of those words that I love. You want to make me smile, say it's time to go home. Love that. But God never promised everything at home would be perfect. Not everything at home is happy. You know, cleaning a toilet doesn't make you happy. Fixing a clogged commode doesn't make anybody happy. Now, it makes you happy when it's fixed, but doing it doesn't make you happy. Washing clothes doesn't necessarily make you happy. Mowing when it's 100 degrees outside doesn't make you happy. Dusting and dealing with stinky trash and all those things, those aren't happy events. But it doesn't mean that you can't have joy in the home. Now, listen to me, just like being pastor, I don't always enjoy every event that comes my way, but I love pastoring. I love helping people. I don't enjoy difficult news, but I love helping people. Please don't take this the wrong way. I don't enjoy watching people die. If you enjoy that, something's not right. But may I say this, I love being with families and helping them as their loved ones go to heaven. Now, I don't enjoy the event itself, but I enjoy helping people. I don't enjoy when people mess their lives up. I don't enjoy having to say bad news to someone. But may I say this, I love helping people. I don't enjoy every part of what I do. Just today, as we were leaving church, a man walked up to me and said that he got word this morning before he came to church that he had a family member die. Like I said, every week of my life, almost every day of my life, I said this morning about, I had a preacher friend who called me this week about an 11-year-old that committed suicide and others. And yet, Friday afternoon or Friday morning, sat in my office and led a man to Christ. Now, that was enough to make anybody shout. But not everything's always good. Too many people want a happy home instead of a joyous home. Well, joy and happiness are the same thing, preacher. No. Too many people expect heaven on earth instead of a place where sinners dwell. If you're there, a sinner lives there. If I'm there, I know there's a sinner there. I'm not excusing wrong behavior, but what I'm saying is maybe we should not set the bar so high at home as to think that it's going to be sinless. No one can reach that. Happiness is based on events or happenings. The word happy comes from the root word happen. In other words, if something good comes your way, a good event, that makes you happy. I was happy that I received something. But I can also have bad things come my way and not be happy. In other words, happenings, the good happenings, are the only time you can be happy. Joy means this: a good attitude in times of opposition. A right or a good attitude in the face of opposition. Let me make a statement here. You can't have joy without opposition. You can have happiness without opposition, but you cannot have joy when everything's going well. You see, you think every experience at home ought to be happy and pleasant. It ain't going to happen. If you live by yourself, that's true. It doesn't happen. Because half the time you don't agree with yourself. Joy is the right attitude in face of opposition. That means all the events may not be good, but I can still have joy at home. Now, happiness is based on other events. Joy is based on me. Happiness is based on everything going on around me. Joy is the character that I have inside of me, not based on what's going on around me. Some are happy that it's hot outside. Some are happy when the sun shines, but when there's no sun, they're not happy. Did you know you can have joy whether it's 100 degrees or 10 below zero? Do you know you can have joy if it's raining or if the sun's shining? The weather should not affect your joy. Everybody doing okay? Okay, I'm getting down to where we're going to start meddling and preaching here in a second. Philippians chapter 3, verse number 10, I want you to notice something here. There is a very strange statement. God says that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. Now watch this. And the fellowship of his sufferings. Oh, fellowship of suffering? Suffering doesn't sound like a time of fellowship to me, does it to you? That word fellowship doesn't mean sitting down and eating with somebody, though. Fellowship is not necessarily a happy word. Suffering is definitely not a happy word. But you can have joy in the fellowship of suffering. Now watch this. What does it mean to have joy in fellowship of suffering? Number one, let me help you. Home needs to be a place of a good average, not all good happenings. Home needs to be a place of a good average, not all good events. Everybody listen to me. Look this way for just a second. I enjoy baseball. I love sports. I love any kind of sport. I don't like watching basketball, but I don't mind playing it a little bit. I don't enjoy watching hockey because that's just fighting on ice. But I don't understand it. I admire the athleticism of the guys doing it, but Don't ask me to go out there and do that. And soccer is the dumbest sport in the world. If you run all that way and can't beat the tar out of somebody, what good is it? I just don't get it. Yeah, well, even if you kick them at the wrong time, then you still get one of those cards out of the referee's pocket. And I've seen both colors of those in a soccer game before, and it's not fun. Now, wait a minute. I enjoy sports. My favorite sport is baseball. I don't watch professional sports of any kind anymore but golf. There's no politics involved in golf, but professional sports has gone such a direction, I honestly don't watch it. But I love baseball. Now, if you'll listen to me, even you ladies and men that don't enjoy any kind of sport of anything, I can teach you something tonight. In baseball, a 300 batting average is considered extremely high. If you hit 300 in a season, you're considered one of the best batters in baseball. That means this. In a baseball season, a batter will bat between 300 and 325 times if he's an everyday player. So a 300 hitter is going to have around 90 hits in an entire season of 160 games. And those are the best hitters. When they bat, 7 out of 10 times, they get out. Now watch this. An average hitter is between 225 and 250. That means this, that they're going to have about 70 to 75 hits in a season. The difference between average and great is one hit every 4 to 5 baseball games. That's the difference between an average hitter and a great hitter in baseball. Everybody doing okay? Now watch this. Home will never be perfect because every person's a sinner. And maybe we should not shoot for 1,000. Maybe we should shoot for a high average. You better realize that, and one of the reasons I like baseball is there are so many games. Usually you'll play 3-game or 4-game series. You'll play them versus every team several times throughout the season. And it gives you a better picture of who your better teams are. You can have a bad game or a bad series and still come out on top. Do you know there's never been in the history of baseball any team that ever had a perfect season? Very few teams, I could count on those two hands, the number of seasons that any team won over 100 games out of 160. If you win 100 games in a season, you're one of the top echelon teams in history. That means they lose at least 60 games. Everybody doing okay? Maybe we ought not look at our home as somewhere where everybody has to be perfect, but we get a pretty high average. Did you know you can't force people to think or act like you? And for the rest of the world, we're thankful for that. Sometimes in baseball, a good hitter has to sacrifice. You might have several guys on base. It's a close ball game and you need one run to score the game. And you got a guy on third base and you might lay a bunt down. And you as a batter sacrifice your at-bat to move that runner around for the better of the team. Or you're to hit a long fly ball and get it out of the infield so that that runner has a chance to score or advance a base. So sometimes you will forfeit your own batting average. You will hurt your own average for the better of the team. Listen to that statement. I wonder how many homes would do much better if we would sacrifice our own self for the betterment of someone else in the home. It's not all about what you want. What's best for everyone? Everybody doing okay? Did you know sometimes it takes correction in a home? Every once in a while, there's Board of Education meetings, and it's applied to the seat of knowledge. Those aren't happy times. But did you know sometimes those are thankful times? As you look back, it becomes better and better. How about let's do our best with our attitudes and just don't worry, you're not going to have a no-hitter. Very few people ever pitch a no-hitter. Nolan Ryan was the only one to pitch 7 no-hitters in a career. I laugh. How many of you remember back in the 80s when somebody charged the mound and Nolan Ryan put the guy's head between his legs and started duking on him? There was a shirt that came out with a picture of him beating on this guy and said the only guy to ever get 8 hits in one game on Nolan Ryan. I just think that's a funny thing, all right? But it was one of those things that just I thought was funny. Now, wait a minute. Did you realize that your children aren't going to be perfect because you're their parent? Children, your parents aren't going to be perfect because you're their child. Husbands, your wife isn't going to be perfect because she married you. And ladies, fellas, your wife isn't perfect. Neither, ladies, is your husband. Now, we have to understand something. Maybe we ought to shoot for a good average. That doesn't mean that you're never going to have bad situations, bad times, bad happenings. I remember my wife and I got married in June, and I met her grandparents for the first time at our wedding. She met my grandparents, I think, for the first time at our wedding, a couple of my grandparents. No problem. Her grandpa and I got along. He was a great guy. He reminded me of my grandfather who had passed away. Just a happy-go-lucky, jovial kind of guy. He helped rear my wife. Just a neat guy. He and I could have gotten a lot of trouble together. We were she was going through college. I had about a half hour, 45 minutes from the time she got home from college till I had to leave for work again. We were sitting down on the couch in our little tiny apartment that was about the size of our platform. Not much bigger than that. And the phone rang, and it was my mother-in-law, and I had picked up the phone. And I said, "Mom, how you doing? I'll let you talk to Deb because I've got to go." She said, "No, I want to talk to you." And I thought, that didn't sound like a good tone of voice. I'm about to get in trouble from my mother-in-law. And she said, "Craig, I don't even know how to say this, but my dad just fell over dead with a heart attack." I said, "Oh, my." It ended up being an aneurysm or something else. I don't remember, but they thought it had been a heart attack at the time. I said, "Oh, my, do you want to talk to Deb?" She said, "No, you're going to tell her. Well, I'll get back with you later. I'll talk to her later, but you tell her." And she hung up. I thought, thanks. Love you too, Mom. I had to sit down on the couch. My wife and I had only been married a few months. And tell her that her grandfather had gone to heaven. And then I had to leave and go to work. And not get back till 1 o'clock in the morning. And I remember making the arrangements. And I went up and I preached his funeral. And her mom and dad and I think sister came. And no, your dad didn't go. It was just your mom and your sister and your brother. And I drove to Minnesota from Chicago. In a blizzard. I'm not lying. It was so bad. I didn't know if we were going to make it there. It was the end of November, the 1st of December. And there must have been 3 feet of snow on the ground, and it was blowing, and oh, it was god-awful. Then I came back, and we had another blizzard on the way home. It's the first time I ever found out that they don't bury people until springtime up there. If you die from the end of October, 1st of November until March, they don't bury you. They just put you in an outbuilding and let you chill out outside. I'm not lying. It's just the way it is. Cost you $15,000 to get a grave open because they got to dynamite it open because of the permafrost. I'm not kidding. They just put you in a metal building outside the funeral home and you stay on ice. Amen. It's cold enough. Nothing's going to happen. Now, wait a minute. I did that funeral. We had only been married a few months. Can I tell you, though, that wasn't a good event. But a bunch of her cousins and other folks in the family got saved. There was joy in some of that. Maybe we ought to shoot for a good average. Let's do our best with our attitudes on those bad games. Did you know somebody's going to have an error? Somebody's going to muff a catch, or they're going to make a bad throw. They're going to swing at a bad pitch. They're going to strike out. Guess what? The game's not over. And the season's not over. That is the joy of fellowship in suffering. Number two, fellowship is a word that means work, not play. The word fellowship literally is the word labor. You get close to somebody by working with them, not playing with them. You get close to someone not just by eating with them. And I think there's a time where eating with people is appropriate. Last night, Ron and Karen and Stephen and my wife and I, we went out to dinner and I got to eat with Stephen. We had pizza together, amen? That's my buddy. And I'm for that. And there's a way to get close, but we get close by doing the work of God even more so. You get close to somebody by working with them, not playing with them. That means this. Home needs to be a place where work is a good thing, not a bad thing. I think it's unwise to use work as punishment. Work ought to be something that's done together in a home. That's why I think moms and dads ought to teach their children how to do the work they do, not make their children do it so that you don't have to do it. Your children weren't born into your home to serve you. You were there to teach them and train them for God. I taught my kids how to mow grass. Why? So that when they left my home, they could take care of their own home. My wife taught my children how to do laundry. That way, when they went to college, they didn't have to call mommy to figure out how to get their laundry done. And they didn't have to bring it home every weekend to have mommy do it. From the time my kids could walk, they were putting laundry in laundry baskets, dragging them around the house. And when they were big enough to take stuff out, she'd take them to the washing machine and hold them up with the basket in one hand and them in the other and make them put it into the washing machine. They didn't know what they were doing, but they thought it was fun. Promise you this, they knew how to make a bed. They didn't always do it the way I wanted it done, but they made it every day. Say why? Because the day was coming when mommy and daddy weren't going to be there and they needed to know how to do those things. Learn to clean a house. Say why? And by the way, we all jumped in. My wife taught and we both worked, and there were many Saturday afternoons. We would take an hour and clean the entire house. We would switch duties up, and I'd clean bathrooms, and somebody would dust, and somebody would vacuum, and this one would do this, and this one would do that. We all traded off, and you say, why? Because everybody needed to learn their part in taking care of the house. Why? Because someday they're going to run their own house. Now I got to do it all. No, I'm teasing. But by the way, I still try to help my wife. If she needs help, I go home for lunch every day. And that's generally our main meal for the day. And I do my best to help her clean the dishes at lunchtime. I'll rinse them off and put them in the dishwasher. I'll clean the pots and the pans and do all that kind of stuff. You say, why? She's good enough to make it. I ought to be able to help clean it up. And there's days that I have busier days, and she'll say, don't worry about it. I didn't have much to do this morning, as much as normal. Just get out of here and let me clean it up. And I'll still do some of it. And then she gets mad and I got to leave. Allow people to make mistakes. Did you know that it is not failure if they make a mistake? It's only failure if they keep making the same mistake. Failure is not making a mistake. Failure is not correcting the mistake and keep making the same one over and over and over and over and over again. We need to teach children that work is fun. We live in a generation that think work is a bad word. You know how to starve somebody that's on food stamps, don't you? Hide them under their work boots. work is where fellowship is found, not play. You're not going to get close to your children because you play video games. You're going to get close to your children because you work with them. You're not going to get close to your children just because you play. Too many parents want to be a buddy instead of being a parent. I'd rather be a parent than be a buddy. I think my children, my grown children will tell you this, they're my friends as well as my children. My daughter-in-law, my son-in-law love me and I love them and I'm their friend, but we know how to work together too. Say, why? Because that's where you learn how to get along. Number three, and I'm going to finish very quickly here. So, number one, shoot for a high average. Number two, fellowship is a word that means work, not play. Number three, learn the joy of being able to absorb blame and go on. Can I tell you something? Blame is highly overrated. Because of our sinful pride, we don't want to take the blame for something that didn't turn out quite right. God, the woman thou gavest me, she made me do it. Adam didn't want to take the blame. Who did God instruct what the rules of the Garden of Eden were? Adam. Wait a minute, he wasn't the first one to disobey. Eve was. But Adam is credited with the wrong. Why? Because one of Adam's jobs was to protect his wife and he didn't protect her. He was standing right next to her when she did it. And he didn't stop her. And God credited Adam with the blame, not Eve. Everybody doing all right? Now hang on. Men, sometimes we need to learn how to absorb the blame. I have found this out. If I absorb the blame, usually the guilty party eventually comes to the surface. Then it gets into, well, it was my fault. No, it's my fault. Then we're arguing over whose fault it is. Did you know it doesn't hurt to say, it was my fault, even if it's not your fault? There will be things happen in our church that I'll stand here and publicly take the blame for that either Brother Josh or Mrs. Barnes maybe didn't do well. But the reason it's not their fault is I'm the leader and I didn't lead them to make sure that it didn't go wrong. Can you do that in your home? I'm not saying that everything that goes wrong is the parents' fault. Did you know out of the billions and billions and billions and billions and tens of billions of people that have been on the face of the earth, God only had one perfect child? I'm going to make a statement here. When a child goes bad, it's not generally the parents' fault. I disagree with saying that if a child does wrong, it's the parents' fault. Every child has a will to choose whether to do right or do wrong. Period. End of discussion. I do not agree with the statement that, well, my adult children, they're not doing right and it's all my fault. No, it's not. They have a right to choose what's right and wrong and they know what's right and wrong. It's their fault, not yours. Everybody doing okay? Some of you ought to take some relief in that statement. Let's not worry about who's to blame. Let's absorb our part of it and be part of the solution, not pointing out who's to blame. Did you know a 2-year-old can blame somebody, but it doesn't fix the problem? You are not the most intelligent Einstein in the world because you can see a problem. Anybody can see a problem. How about we quit pointing out problems and start figuring out fixes? Solutions are far better than problems. Maybe you're a better leader if you're not worried about the problem, but you are worried about the solution. Now, I don't want anybody to take the blame but me. When you get to the point when you can look at a child that's done wrong and say, okay, it's my fault. Even though the child did wrong, I've seen children over a period of time come back and say, Dad, you shouldn't have to take blame for that. That was my fault. What a wonderful way to teach them what God does. But God commandeth his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He knew you disobeyed, but he sent obedience for you and paid the sin debt for you. And he's just waiting for you to come back and say, it's my fault. Can you forgive me? What a wonderful way to parent. Instead of pointing out all the wrong, why don't you absorb the blame and be the righteous one and then let them come back? Maybe you'd have better fixes and better solutions if we do so. Got to finish. 1 John 4:7-8. Beloved, let us love one another. For love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. Listen to this statement. I have never, ever, in 30, almost 33 years of full-time Christian service, I have never counseled two people in a love relationship of any kind, whether it be two friends, a husband and wife, child parent, church member pastor, pastor and pastor, you name it. I've never counseled two people arguing, fussing, and bickering with one another who were in a love-type relationship to where both of them were right with God. One or both wasn't walking with God like they should. I didn't say it, God did. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And he that loveth is born of God, are you saved, and knoweth God. He that loveth not, knoweth not God. Before I come unscrewed on that little lady right there, I better get alone and say, God, I'm about to get angry in a way I should not. What's wrong this way? What do I need to fix this way? Can I show you a wonderful truth? Watch this for a second. If everything's right this way, everything will be okay this way. If you have problems this way, you're having problems that way. I just can't get my adult child to do this. How about you get this right and not worry about this? Not your responsibility, what your adult children do. I love him, but what he does is between him and God, not between him and me. Everybody doing all right? I'm not accountable for it anymore. He moved out 12 years ago. Praise the Lord. I mean, he's been on his own a long time. I'm not accountable for that. Too many of you can't take the hit in your pride because they're not doing exactly what you want to do. How about you leave that up to God and you get this right, and then all of this will take care of itself. I promise you. In other words, maybe to have a joyous home, we need to get in love with the source of all love, and that is our God. Let me ask you a question. Do you want a happy home or do you want a joyous home? Maybe we ought not shoot for a perfect home. I know this. Mine's not perfect. I'm there. But I mean this with all the humility. I know how to say this. I have a pretty joyous home. And always have. You say, why? She doesn't expect me to be perfect. And I know she is. I learned two words real well. Yes, ma'am. No. She has imperfections too. But I don't expect her to be perfect. Quit expecting perfection. How about we expect joy? Every head bowed, every eye closed. I'm done. Maybe we could have more joy and not worry about the happiness. Too many of us are looking for the right happenings instead of the right attitude in the opposition. How about we seek a joyous home? The fellowship of suffering.